Hi, I'm Jim O'Brien. It becomes a Big Jim here in the Motor City. Welcome into the garage. Very honored today. Travis Sikulski, digital editor, Road and Track Magazine. Travis, how are you, man?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Welcome to the Motor City. I'm fantastic. I was thinking about you guys, and I had read the piece that you had written about. Nobody seems to agree on the long-term impact of Ford cutting its cars, which is where I wanted to start, because obviously here in Detroit, but also across the country, I don't think people understand what this means, or maybe are we reading too much into it? Where are we with this?
I mean, it's kind of an interesting little change, because they're the first full-line car manufacturer that's going to decide they're only going to focus on crossovers and sport utilities, right? They're not going to do anything other than the Mustang and the Focus Active, which is kind of a crossovery focus here in the U.S., and everything else is going to be light truck, crossover utility sort of vehicle, because that's what people are buying these days, and that's what Ford makes the most money on.
Well, do you think, though, like, so is that going to affect as well? I think you mentioned in your piece as well, with Ford Performance, that means Focus ST, Focus RS, Fiesta ST, they'll be available, but probably not here in the States?
That's what I believe. I mean, there is a new Fiesta ST, but when we first heard about the new Fiesta and the new Fiesta ST, we were continually asking Ford, when are they going to come here? And they'd say, well, stay tuned for more information. These are important parts of our product portfolio. And then, you know, we find out that the Fiesta is not even coming. But the Fiesta ST is coming, but not to the U.S. It's coming to Europe. And, I mean, I think that for us in the U.S., Ford Performance will still exist. Obviously, I mean, we're going to get an Edge ST, an Explorer ST, the Raptor. I mean, Things that sell and basically print money every time they build one. But we're not going to get the small cars, especially when the new Focus ST comes out. I mean, I'm sure there'll be a new Focus RS in a few years, but it'll be like years past when we didn't get hot Focuses, even when we had the Focus as a car we could buy here. I don't think that's going to be something that changes in the near future.
I was thinking about this too, Travis. I mean, you know, Ford has gotten so many headlines for this, but FCA, were they ahead of the curve or they just made the right non-step? Because you think about it, when the Dart and the 200 went away, we were all here going, okay, what are they going to replace it with? They didn't replace it with anything.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the problem is that, you know, the small car market in the U.S. is so fickle, because you have, when gas prices get high, people want small cars. But right now, gas prices have been low for probably, what, 5-6 years now, and so the demand for small cars has been going down and down. And it's not an area where people are investing, at least our domestic manufacturers aren't investing in new platforms and models to fill that market, because they just don't see the market right now.
Well,
I think it might be a little short-sighted, but I'm not obviously in the industry, so I don't have. I mean, I'm not an automaker myself, so I can't say exactly what they're thinking.
And, you know, the other thing that we talk so much about when we have Travis Sikulski on with us, digital editor, Road and Track Magazine. I was thinking about here in Detroit, and Travis, like, when I drive home every day, I go through the tech corridor in Auburn Hills, and I see a lot of new companies popping up. But I've seen Mahindra establish a footprint here. We hear the Chinese car makers, Geely, and, you know, some of them here. These are all companies now that, if you stay away long enough from building small cars like this, like the Fords and the FCAs, there's going to be an opportunity there eventually, because historically, gas prices have never stayed low for an extended period of time.
Yeah, and you think about it too, like, every brand builds its reputation on sedans. That's where almost every, you know, passenger car maker has made their name, right?
Sure.
Look at Hyundai. They started off selling tiny cars that were cheap and got great gas mileage for years, and now they've expanded to be a full line maker with more than one brand, with luxury cars, with everything. So, I mean, same with Kia, right? Kia just went through everything to introduce the Stinger as something that they can hold high as a, you know, a sports sedan that, you know, BMW made its name on sports sedans. Kia is going to make its reputation on sports sedans too. So it's something that, like, you know, you can build the volume models, but the company doesn't tend to hinge on something like a crossover. It usually hinges on something like a small sedan or
Toyota. What was it? The Corona, which became the Corolla way back when. That was their opening in the market.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, the Corolla still sells like mad. The Civic still sells like mad. The Accord, Camry, all that sort of stuff still sells like crazy. It's kind of, for Ford's case, it's kind of like, you know, it's a catch-22, because they had cars that were great when they came out. The Focus, the Fiesta, the Fusion were all highly acclaimed cars. But then over time, I don't think the development in those models was there at the same rate that they were for some of the other manufacturers.
Yeah.
And that has kind of made it now. They don't want to invest on bringing new versions of these cars back because they don't think people are going to buy them because people aren't buying the cars right now. So it's kind of like, you know, a chicken and the egg sort of situation.
It's funny you mentioned Hyundai because I'm actually driving the Accent this week doing a review on that. Small car, but the thing that struck me, Travis, was like I'm driving the small car and I'm looking around going, all right, I'm getting 38 miles a gallon. I mean, the car is not, it's not like you're going to win any interior awards, but it's not bad. You've got Apple CarPlay. You've got cruise control. You know, it's solid. The sound system isn't state of the art, but it's still solid. And then I open it up and I'm looking at the price point. It's 19 grand. I mean, you're selling a completely functional four-door car for under 20 grand. The domestic automakers can't get near that.
Well, that's crazy because, like, for my wife and I actually just got a Mazda 3 as our car. And that
car,
I mean, it's been around since 2014 now. It's actually about to change and get redesigned again. But, I mean, for the price, you can't beat it. It's a fantastic car that has such high-end features that I'm in this business, and I'm surprised every day when I get in the car now to see, like, how nice it is inside. You know, it's incredible. And, you know, it was 25 grand.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's you know, we'd start looking at I got friends who would go out and get a Focus, and then I would ask them, and by the time they're getting all the bells and whistles stuff, they're over 30. And I'm like, you just never, as growing up, I mean, like when I was in the service way back when, I remember 1980 something, the very first car I bought was a piece of crap, Travis, don't judge me. It was a Chevy Spectrum.
Oh, geez.
But I was in the Navy, and it was cheap. It was a car that I could get for under $9,000, and I knew I was only going to have it for a couple of years, and I was gone to sea half the time anyway. So I went out and got one, and guess what? It was cheap, and it was kind of a piece of crap, but I drove the hell out of it for a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, as you should. That's the whole point, right?
Right. But I think with Ford, you know, when I look at Ford and when I look at FCA and them, like even the Dart when it came out, it was such a cool car. But then when you started looking at the options, the GT and the Aero, I'm doing the air quotes, all of a sudden you're getting close to 30 grand again for a small car. I'm like, in some ways, I feel like they priced themselves out of their own market.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, they used to, the Focus at least, when it first came out again, like the last redesign, it was one of the most highly acclaimed small cars there is. And the last time I drove one was as a rental car, and I got to say it was not great as a car at all. It was not something that I would choose to drive if given the choice of a Focus or a Civic. I would take a Civic every day, and I think that's part of the problem. And I think that a lot of buyers have seen that, and that's why their business has gone down in that area, and why they decided to focus on things where they're, you know, making a ton of money, which is Edge, you know, Explorer kind of boring-ish cars, but solid cars that, you know, add to the bottom line, whereas the sedan business was losing for them, which is not great.
Do you think with your perspective, Travis, as you look at the industry, everybody here is waiting to see the Bronco. You know, we were given like one quick snapshot of it from a distance, and that was about it. And we're waiting on the Blazer and stuff. So maybe are we going to get to a point now with some of these CUVs and the smaller SUVs that we're going to get into performance and off-road capability and making it where it's not just Jeep and everybody else?
I mean, I think that's the goal because, I mean, the Wrangler has been such a star for the last, you know, 10 years, and now with the new one, which is by all accounts excellent, I think everybody wants a piece of that pie, and I think that the Bronco is going to probably be the most legit competitor to it because I've heard the Blazer is more of a small crossover than it is a actual off-roader. That's what I'd heard, but I don't know. It could have changed because I haven't seen it or heard anything official about it.
It could change five times by the time we air this. Yeah,
exactly. But the Bronco is something that we're looking forward to, and they also announced that they're going to make an even smaller version of the Bronco. Something that you know, they really want to go all in on that market, which I think is probably a pretty good move because Jeep has owned that for forever, essentially, and no one's competing with them, which is a big help to FCA for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, you look, yesterday I was driving down the road and I looked at my rearview mirror and there was a guy with a Colorado, that ZR2.
Mm-hmm.
That thing is just, it looks like you're just dying to go take that to Mojave and just open it up. It doesn't look right on a paved road. That thing is built for off-road.
Yeah, I mean, same with the Raptor, but you know, we're based in New York. I'm based in New York City, and I see more Raptors in the city than I do outside the city. It seems to be the ultimate city car. You can't park it anywhere, but you can drive over anything in sight, which is kind of important here. So,
is that like Ford's Hummer? They kind of like people like you see people with a Hummer, and you go, you're never going to use that vehicle the way it was built.
Well, it's a shame because the thing is, it's astounding off-road, but you know, driving it around here, I felt like it was doing it a disservice the one time I drove when I couldn't. I was just way too big. So I can't imagine why people would have it in the city, but I mean, more power to them. As long as they're buying something cool, that's all good by me.
And you always post, Travis, some of the cool stuff. I love, like, when I see Conan Sags and stuff that you guys put up on Road and Track. But we were having a discussion, a friend of mine, we were talking about horsepower. Mm-hmm. Is there a point when with production-based cars now, you see, like, I had the GT for I had a Mustang GT, and I drove the stick with a V8. So you're looking at, what, 460 brake horsepower. And then when you start looking at Camaros, and then obviously you see what, you know, Dodge is cranking out and their performance stuff. Is there ever a point where we're just going to go, that's enough with horsepower, or we're just going to keep going? It's like instead of an arms race, it's like a wheels race or a horsepower race.
I mean, is it ever enough?
No, it isn't.
You can always have more.
No.
Why wouldn't you? If you can have more, get more. But I think the point for me is that you know, it's great to have all this power, but it's really tough to actually use it these days, especially on the road and the way that the manufacturers are gearing the transmissions for 0-60 times and for fuel economy. You have such tall gearing that, you know, by the time you're in second or third gear, you're at speeds where you're going to go to jail if you get caught by a cop.
Exactly.
So it's another one of those things, right? They want to. It's tough. They want to keep having more and more power, but there's very, very, very few places you can use it. I mean, even like the Dodge Demon is technically illegal at drag strips for some point. If you run it under, I think it's under a 9, but I don't remember off the top of my head. But it's so fast that even the NHRA has taken notice of it, which should say something to you.
Yeah, and then you wonder how people are going to react when people realize the GT500 that Ford's bringing out is going to be well over 200 miles an hour. They're saying somewhere between 212 and 226.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that's going to be – I mean, so we're in a Mustang GT this week as well, and it's – you know, you can hit like 80 miles an hour in second gear, 70 miles an hour. It's
right.
It's so much, and on the roads around where I live, it's just unusable. I mean, speed limit's 35 or 45, so if I want to accelerate, I better make sure that there's nothing coming either way that could have, you know, a light bar on top. So, you know, or else I'll have a real problem with continuing to work here.
I have the exact same thing. I have the stick, and I was in third gear doing 70 onto the freeway. And I just looked down going, well, that was fun.
Yeah, I mean, we had it. We took it to the track last week, and, you know, you're hitting 130 miles an hour, and it's not even getting close to the top of fifth gear. So it's crazy. It's crazy how fast cars have gotten, but it's nice to have that when you're on the track for sure. But I would appreciate shorter gearing and some sacrifice on 0-60 time, but that's a totally different discussion.
It is. I still think that everyone I've talked to as an engineer says the best coupling is the 10-speed automatic and the EcoBoost, that you get just as much performance and you can drive it better.
I'll have to try it out.
Yeah, that's from guys at Ford, actually, have told me that. They said if you really want to stretch it out a bit, that's the way to do it. Travis, it's fun talking to you. You know, it's funny, I mean, thinking, though, real quick, you could put up a picture of, you could put up a video, which is nothing more than a picture of a Conan Sag, and then I could do 20 minutes on talking about a Hyundai Accent, and the Conan Sag would get 100 times the views just because of our love for cool-looking cars.
Yeah, I mean, well, you say that, but then again, more people are Googling for information about a Hyundai because there are more people buying a Hyundai than there are people buying a Koenigsegg. So it might even out in the end over the long run.
It's going to be fun, man. I'm really curious to see what the reaction is going to be in the market. Is there anything that we should look, anything else coming up with you guys at Road and Track? Anything we should look forward to be checking out other than the norm?
Well, we just got to drive the McLaren Senna, which is the, you know, the 800 horsepower track special $1 million car. But instead of sending one of our regular guys to drive it, we decided that, you know, this is a car that demands someone who can get the best out of it. So we sent IndyCar driver J.R. Hildebrand to go. So he wrote that up for us, and it just went up on the site. Definitely check it out, because it's what I think is the definitive review of the car. Because as we know, there, you know, people in this business, in the auto journals and business, can drive really well, but they can't drive as well as an Indy 500 Rookie of the Year. So he's also an adjunct professor at Stanford, so he has a really unique take, and I think that it's totally worth the time.
Well, anything with Senna on it, and the fact they honor Ayrton Senna, if you go down into my basement, Travis, I have a Banco National hat from the Ayrton Senna from his, you know, the foundation. That I bought one of those hats. I've got a mini helmet as well, and then a version of the McLaren as well up on the shelf. So,
hey, I mean,
dude, it's Ayrton Senna.
There wouldn't be. I was going to say, it wouldn't be a proper race fan's house without something.
Yeah. Well, this is fantastic, man. It was great talking to you. And we should talk when they finally unwrap. Oh, I got a question for you. I promise to let you go, Travis. We've been trying to figure out where the hell they're going to unveil the mid-engine Corvette. A lot of people, you know, go, well, they'll do it here at the Detroit Auto Show. I'm like, no way. No way. I don't think they're going to wait for that in Geneva or somewhere else, or maybe do a standalone gig. What do you think on the timing of that?
I mean, I personally think it would be Detroit just because, you know, if there's one show that Chevy wants to own, it's going to be the home show. And next year, I mean, there's going to be a few things there, I would assume.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the GT500 is going to be there. Why wouldn't Chevy want to own the show when the GT500 comes out? They would much rather have the narrative be about them and the mid-engine Corvette than they would have it be about Ford and a pony car. So I think that that is a good place to look. I would also think maybe at a standalone event. We had heard rumors that the ZR1 was actually going to be unveiled at, you know, when before it came out at the Dubai show. It was supposed to come out at an IMSA race at Road America. So it's possible that we could see something like that, maybe in conjunction with Le Mans. But I'm leaning towards saying Detroit as the place where it's going to be.
And then I anticipate in pretty short order that you're going to find out that Corvette's going to be running at Le Mans as well. There's no way they're going to let Ford just kick their ass with that GT over and over.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, Travis, it's a lot of fun, man. Thank you for taking the time out. I did not. I hit you on Twitter yesterday. I did not talk about Dodge Caravan Sport Editions like I was going to.
So. I was actually just looking at that tweet. I remember I love that video because it's a guy who put an SRT4 engine into a Dodge Caravan.
It's the best, man. Fantastic. I just saw I was driving down the road and I saw one of the Pacifica S, the Sport Edition. I'm like, stop it, just stop it. It's a minivan. Stop it. You guys did this once before and it didn't work. Quit it.
Hey, who knows? Maybe they'll put a Hellcat motor in there.
Oh, challenge accepted. All right, Travis, great talking to you at Digital Editor Road and Track Magazine. Thanks for joining us, bud. Have a great day.
Hey, great. Thanks for your time.